This is Audible.
Audible Originals presents Half-Light, written by Tayari Jones, performed by Bonnie Turpin.
"Does this count as civil disobedience?" I asked my sister as we waited at the traffic light. Noticing my lips move, Cam turned down the music. "What?" I said that what we're doing is a kind of civil disobedience. She shook her head. "No, it's not. It's grand larceny, a felony in the state of Georgia. And don't forget breaking and entering." "Are you telling me this as my sister or as my lawyer?" "I'm telling you this as an accomplice. I believe in the rule of law as much as the next person, or maybe I should say that I believe in the rule of law as much as the next black person." And then Cam would say that she believes in the rule of law as much as the next black woman person. And maybe if she had downed a little bit of brown liquor and it was a Saturday night, she would say that she believes in the rule of law as much as the next black woman queer person. And if I was with her and she was in a good mood, we would likely drink to that. But today wasn't a Saturday night. It was 9:45 on a Tuesday morning, third week of November. Atlanta is gorgeous this time of year. The air gets just a tiny bit crisp and the trees really do their thing. We were 3 weeks and 3 days past what would have been my 17th wedding anniversary, which means the anniversary itself landed on a Saturday. This was when Cam hyped me up to go on this mission to take back what was ours. We had been in my bedroom doing each other's hair. Once a month or so, we get together to palm roll our shoulder-length locks while enjoying a bit of bourbon. We take our maker's mark like our daddy did, neat. The air in the room was heavy with the smell of shea butter and coconut oil. My eyes were closed as I enjoyed the feel of my sister's fingers against my scalp, but she was staring at the empty space on the wall where Ophelia used to hang. I had been meaning to get that wall repainted to remove the discoloration that underscored the fact that my ex, Train, stole my inheritance, as well as the best years of my life. "We need to go take that shit back," Cam said. The shit in question is a lush oil painting in a gilt frame. It's a picture of my mother as Ophelia, the beautiful doomed virgin from Hamlet. I can't even tell you what it's worth because no art collectors even know it exists. The creator, Jacques Toussaint, the Haitian portrait artist, famous in some circles. Toussaint's versions of Lady Macbeth, Caliban, and Richard III were auctioned at Sotheby's for high six figures. I read in Ebony that the Obamas have Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Mama has never had it appraised because the portrait is personal, not an asset for professionals to gawk at. This is the story she told to me and my sister when we were about 10 years old. She met the artist in the late 60s when she was at Harvard for a summer. Each morning, she would visit a French cafe for a coffee drink called a cortado and a buttered baguette, so different from the grits and eggs she would prepare for my father. Back then, Mama was a young woman, trim-waisted and well-coiffed. She told us that she wore a pencil skirt to her knee, a cashmere twin set, and her diamond engagement ring, clipped to a simple gold wedding band. Things were very clear. Toussaint made a quick sketch of her right there in the cafe, and from those simple lines he created the portrait. Just one day before she left Massachusetts to return to Atlanta and domestic life, he presented it to her in a cardboard folder and suggested that she should give it to her husband as a gift. Mother accepted the art, but she kept it for herself, hanging it in the foyer without comment or explanation. As a rule, our mother isn't the type who keeps secrets from her husband. She isn't the kind of woman who forms a private coven with her daughters, whispering rules of feminine survival. Cam and I were shocked our first year at Howard University when our suite mates proudly shared the life hacks passed on by their protective mothers. "She never even told us to have our own money," Cam said. "Other people's mamas sent them to college armed to survive the bullshit. Our mother raised us to be suckers." "It could just be that Daddy is a good man," I said. "Did that ever occur to you?" "He never gave her any reason to fortify herself." Cam shook her head. "I can't believe we're sisters." She said this to me a lot when we were coming up, and it would hurt my feelings. It's not exactly the type of thing you expect to hear from your identical twin. But we weren't like other identicals. We had the same face, and that was about it. As soon as Cam realized the relationship between food intake and physique, she resolved to eat her way into her own personal body. By eighth grade, she was a lovely egg-shaped girl, while I was still all angles like our father. No one ever confused us. Camellia was the round one, and Amelia was the skinny one. For years, my mother tried to force Cam to slim down. She packed austere lunches in pink Tupperware cubes and insisted on dressing us in clothes cut for my straight up-and-down frame. Cam wore the ill-fitting outfits with defiance that became rage that landed us all into family therapy. 18 unpleasant months later, a truce was reached. Cam could eat whatever the hell she wanted, and I would be good girl enough for both of us. I don't think this is what the therapist had in mind, but it's what we ended up with. Peace is what Daddy called it, bless his soul. But he wasn't the one who had to learn to be everything my mother ever wanted. We emerged from therapy and puberty as two separate people who happened to have the same birthday and whose names happened to rhyme. The therapist thought it was healthy that from then on, instead of Camellia and Amelia, we were to be called Cam and Leah. She also wanted each of us to come back for individual sessions. But, like they say, people in hell want ice water. But do they get it? The last time we even came close to dressing alike was on my wedding day. As my maid of honor, her dress had to conform to the wedding palette. I was racing the clock, trying to make it down the aisle before I turned 33, the third and final deadline I had given myself. The original plan had been to follow my mother's playbook. She married Daddy the same day she finished college. This was in 1967. She had been in a time crunch herself, but not because she was pregnant. She liked to emphasize this point. 50-some-odd years later, she is still stung by her landlady who offered to knit a pair of booties when Mama announced her engagement. Her wedding date, May 12th, was chosen so that her relatives who were in town for her graduation could hang around for a few hours more and see her legally wed to the son of Dr. Albert Hall, a prominent pediatrician in Atlanta. She didn't marry Daddy for the money and the status. Anyone who has ever seen them together knows this was a love match. But marrying the son of a doctor, destined to be a doctor himself, was a coup for Mama, the daughter of a maid and a mill worker. The dress she wore that day was a complicated garment she designed and sewed herself. For the graduation ceremony at Sister's Chapel, she pulled a drawstring, raising the hem to mid-calf. For the wedding at Danforth Chapel, it was let down to graze the floor. Cam and I both use this story as fodder for cocktail chatter. For me, the story is all Mama. Glamorous yet thrifty. Hardworking yet charmed. Cam agrees that the story is all Mama, but when she tells it, it's a hilarious farce about foibles of respectability. While I concentrate on the ingenuity of the convertible gown, Cam asks aloud how Mama could have better spent the hours that she used to create the satin feet of domestic engineering. She segues into an amusing story about how she, Cam, got booted out of home ec in the 11th grade. I had been there. It hadn't been funny at the time. I thought I would wear the dress for my own wedding. But Mama balked at the idea of anything that was literally mammy-made. We went to Lorraine's in Virginia Highlands and selected a proper gown for me and a mermaid dress for Cam. Curtained into the dressing room, my sister let loose 5 sharp sneezes in a row. She was allergic to jasmine, and the place reeked of potpourri. "How does it look?" I asked her. "Ironic," she said, stepping from behind the lace curtain. Cam's body, or maybe her spirit, seemed to deliberately challenge the dress's architecture. Where it nipped, she spread. Where it demanded a flare, my sister gave all compression and economy. The color, a shade of lavender called hydrangea, was beautiful against her skin. My mother sucked in a breath of delight, I think. I almost laughed, but then I remembered Cam, when we were kids, shoehorned into the tight skirts and blouses designed to make her look like me. I remembered her full cheeks, streaked with furious tears. "Do you want to try a different cut?" I nudged her back into the dressing room and pulled the curtain, leaving our mother on the other side. Cam and I studied ourselves in the mirror. Back when I thought I wanted to go to film school, I used to spend a lot of energy trying to create a narrative with only pictures. What I saw reflected in the glass was a story, but not a true story. My dress fit me like a dream and seemed to speak for the rest of my life, telling anyone with eyes that my world was tailored and exact. A bespoke experience, not a fantasy dreamed up before I was even born. Cam, beside me, appeared to be the awkward one, with the dress straining to contain her and her face struggling to disguise her frustration and what? It wasn't anger, I don't think, but it smelled like it. I closed my eyes and tried to feel her emotions, twin to twin, but I couldn't put words to what I saw in the mirror. "For real," I said. "We can get you something else. You can wear pants. I don't care." "Nah," she said. "It's your day. Let's just buy it and keep it moving." So we bought it and we kept it moving. This, of course, was forever ago. This was 2 kids ago, girls, not twins. 2 easy but separate pregnancies that started after 2 difficult years in a marriage I probably shouldn't have gotten into in the first place. But to regret Train would be to regret my kids. And how could I regret Nia and Audrey? I am sorry about my wedding day. The champagne tower, the 500 invitations, the no kids reception, and Cam's mermaid dress. There's no getting back squandered time. And besides, like Daddy used to say, time couldn't be lost like a watch or a wallet. It wasn't like I spent the 16 years locked in a tower. I did lots of things. I raised the girls, that counts. And although Cam insisted on dressing like a gentleman from the Harlem Renaissance, she had no intention of being the son that Daddy never had. Somebody had to go to medical school, so I stepped up. Atlanta dermatologist Dr. Amelia Hall McKinney has been honored by the Urban League twice and was once quoted in Essence magazine. Daddy was delighted. "But you never went to film school," said Cam. "What about your dreams?" That's the thing about being twins. The mind-reading thing is real. We were sitting in the car in front of Train's house, preparing to break and enter. I turned my eyes to the window for just 1 second, trying to get my nerves together in the privacy of my own mind, and Cam elbowed her way in, and then had the nerve to comment. It was rude. "Statistically speaking," I said, "it's smart that I never went to film school. Most people who go to med school end up being doctors. Going to film school is just a really expensive lottery ticket. I'm not talking about film school only. I'm talking about whatever it is you might want to do with your life. What I want to do with my life right now is retrieve the Toussaint. We'll resuscitate my dreams some other time. Because I had been the one who paid for it, I got to keep the house on Glenwood Avenue, which reminded Train of his upbringing in Brooklyn. He lamented that his mother sold the brownstone for next to nothing, but when he was feeling fair, he admitted that she really had no choice. They called it do-or-die Bed-Stuy for a reason. She had been a woman living alone in 1987 when she let the white people have it for $40,000 before hightailing it out to Queens. I found the perfect house for us on the east side of town, halfway between the gingerbread Victorians off Boulevard and the quirky Four Squares off Moreland Avenue. Our family home in Glenwood Park is perfect. Four narrow stories high, like a classic Brooklyn brownstone, but with modern plumbing. Train loved that the neighbor's house was so close by that he waved at them from the kitchen and they waved back from their leather couch. When Georgia beat Georgia Tech, we could hear them cheer. Occasionally, we joined their whooping and hollering just to be polite. It wasn't cheap, but those years of playing house were the happiest of my adult life. I grew up here in Atlanta, but on the southwest side of town, in a roomy ranch house situated on 4 acres, lined with magnolias, crepe myrtles, and dogwoods. Nobody whooped, hollered, or peeked in each other's windows. Glenwood Park is only 20 minutes away, still within the city limits, but sometimes it seems so far that it feels like you should have to get a passport and a visa to make the journey from Cascade Heights. Train was so attached to the house that I thought he would fight me for it. The down payment was earned at my practice, but the home was ours together. If I am feeling generous, I can admit that he put a lot of sweat into the property. He constructed the bookcases by hand, and with a buddy, he knocked out walls, swapped out light fixtures, and ripped up carpet. I wrote the checks, but he shaped it into our home. Had Cam not shushed me with a growl, I might have told this to the judge. During our divorce proceedings, I had gone out of my way to remain positive. Cam, serving as my attorney, not my sister, cautioned that the thing that kills women in divorce court is a bitter face. Think about it, Leah. You're sitting in front of a judge who is no doubt cheating on his wife. A woman, mad as hell, dividing up marital property is his deepest dread, or worse, will give him PTSD from his own breakup. So what you need to do is present yourself sweet like pecan candy. But you can't be a judge in divorce court and not expect a little, well, passion. Look, Leah, Cam said, I'm repping you for free, but you have to listen. This is how we are going to play this. When we are sitting in that room, you think of all the reasons you married him. You think of all the reasons you stayed married to him. And while you're doing that, let me remember all the reasons why you're divorcing him. I naively thought that we could avoid going to court at all, dividing everything up in a sane and civil mediation. But Train, forever unpredictable, decided he wanted full custody of our daughters. I was alarmed, angry, and irritated. On top of that, I was confused. Train was a musician, more comfortable on the road than at PTA meetings or Jack and Jill. He loved the girls to pieces, but I was the one who had done the legwork of raising them. I was almost insulted that he thought my contribution had been so insignificant that he could take it over just by asking a judge. Cam assured me that there was nothing to worry about, and there wasn't. Train didn't even have a real lawyer. He was represented by a social worker who played electric fiddle with him when Train used to live in Asheville. Train ended up with the usual father's share. He said,
"Make sure you tell Audrey and Nia that I tried for full custody. I don't want them to think that I didn't want them."
I was touched by his sad smile. Cam was not. We were divorced. I went back to my four-story home, and he went to the Craftsman bungalow he bought for less than the cost of a used Toyota. Train's house, situated right on the Atlanta Beltline, was appreciating like crazy. That man stays holding aces. "Twin," I said, watching her roll on a pair of latex gloves, which were a bit gratuitous, in my opinion. "Hmm?" she said, snapping the gloves with a pop. "Who all knows we are here?" "Me, you, Mama, and Pam." She ticked the names off on her blue fingers. "Pamela the shark?" Cam shrugged. "You think I am going to commit a crime before consulting with my attorney?" "Pam is a contract lawyer. She doesn't do criminal defense." Cam said, "She's a generalist, and more importantly, we lived together for 2 years, so I trust her." This is one of the things that I really don't get. How is it that Cam is so chummy with the people in her past that she can call them up for legal advice and me and Train can't even be in the same room together without somebody crying, me, or somebody yelling, him? And it wasn't just Pam the shark that still loved Cam after she had moved on. There was also Melinda the mechanic, who changed her alternator just last month. Another of her exes, Nicole, is the one who pulled the papers letting me know that Train had acquired this house on the DL just a year after we moved to Glenwood Park. He bought it in cash, money he saved from jazz club gigs that paid under the table. The deed bore his mama's name, so we couldn't touch it. Cam said, "It was his mad money. Somebody gave him some good advice." According to Cam, Pam the shark had advised that we shouldn't do this at all. If we really wanted the Toussaint, we should go back to court. "What did you tell her?" Now, Cam was tucking her hair under a gray cashmere watch cap. "Did I tell her that we already lost in court, making a fool out of me in front of a fiddle-playing social worker pretending to be a lawyer? No, I didn't mention it." "It never crossed my mind that he would keep the Toussaint." "Let's not go there," Cam said. "Let's commit this felony and put this bullshit behind us." The Toussaint was mine, in any sort of common sense way. It belonged to my mother, and my mother had given it to me. Train loved it at first sight, and I loved him at first sight, and for our first wedding anniversary, I gave it to him. But when I presented it, I was still in till death do us part mode. And what did it mean to give someone something that you think will hang over the bed that you anticipated sharing for the rest of your lives? When the fiddle player mildly spoke of the Toussaint as Train's property, Cam jumped up so fast and hard that she upset the water glasses on the table.
"No, sir,"
she said. And I wasn't sure which of the men in the room she was talking to. For me, it took a minute for the outrage to kick in. I was still following Cam's advice to remember why I'd loved him at all. I remembered lying in bed, watching him study the reflection of the Toussaint in the mirror. It was 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We had fallen in bed after lunch, as we were wont to do in the early days. He gazed up at the Toussaint as he stepped into his boxer shorts, still damp from the shower.
"That's stunning," he said. "That man was a master. Black genius in full effect. It trips me out how an artist can take paint, the same stuff I use in the garage, just wet paint, and use it to create a whole world. You, floating down the river, just being beautiful. You just being art."
"Oh," I said, That's not me, that's Mama. She's the one that got turned into art.
Looks like you.
Looks like Cam, too, but that's Mama, before me and Cam made her into a mother. He squinted at it.
Nope. All I see is my wife. Gorgeous and luscious.
I liked the way he said that word, wife.
A fucking Jacques Toussaint original, he said again. You get to be in a Toussaint.
I was lying on top of the sheets, naked as a freshly peeled apple, still smelling of his cologne. Stretching my arms over my head, elongating my body and displaying myself, I hoped to tempt him to come back to bed. He paused, as if weighing his options, then went back to the business of dressing himself.
You know I have a gig.
That word gig always made him smile. You know, I said, you are the special one. You make art. What's a guitar? Wood and string, but you put your fingers on it and create magic. You're gifted. I'm a hard worker, but you are the one with talent. The next morning, our paper anniversary, I gave him the Toussaint. And in return, he played his guitar for me and handed me the score on a piece of paper. Regardless of what happened 15 years later, I will always hold that moment against my breast.
You gave him Mama's Toussaint for a song,
Cam had said, walking out of divorce court, disgusted.
Literally, a song?
She was wearing an immaculate suit. Her brilliant silk tie was now askew. I had on a floral wrap dress. We looked like one of those couples who come to resemble each other with age. Despite Cam's teenage efforts, the years had brought our looks together again. She gave up the rebellious eating in her 30s, around the same time I started having kids. She got a little thinner, I got a little heavier, and voila, a matched set.
You're stupid, Leah, she said.
She didn't sneer it, she didn't shout it. She said it calmly, with maybe a touch of self-rebuke. Like this was a possibility that she should have considered when crafting the case. She tensed, bunching her left cheek.
Mama gave it to you because you were the one she trusted.
I never would have lost it, she said softly. Cam, I said. We kept the house.
He didn't want your house. It still has a note on it. He's in the hood chilling in that fixer-upper.
But we got the kids, I said. Audrey and Nia are the most important thing, right?
Leah, Cam said.
He didn't want the kids.
We could have threatened to make him take them, and he would have screamed like a little girl.
We were sitting in Cam's convertible on the street near the courthouse. Across the road, a pair of black ladies walked into a building under a sign that said, Free at Last Bail Bondsman. The women were elderly. I could tell by their stooped backs and tight curled wigs. I wondered what they clutched in their A-frame purses. Deeds to a house, or a car, or maybe small banded blocks of cash, a lifetime of labor turned into paper.
Women are stupid, Cam said. I wish I had kids so I could raise them not to be so fucking stupid.
She hit her hand on the steering wheel, just as Train exited the courthouse with his lawyer, all teeth. They slapped each other on the back. He caught my eye and fixed his face into something polite and neutral. This was what? 2 years under the bridge? 2.5? Life had gone on just as my father promised it would, even though life hadn't gone on for him. He was able to work his magic on my mother, who forgave me with a dramatic declaration over Thanksgiving dinner. I asked him how he got her to come around.
I just used your own words, he smiled, feeling proud of himself. You are the one who said it was just paper.
It was one of our last conversations. I hugged him and kissed him on the top of his head,
just near the scar from his last surgery, the one the doctors promised would cure him. Such are promises. Cam, on the other hand, just couldn't let it go.
It's not just paper, she said. Save that bullshit for Mama and Daddy. This was ours, and you gave it to a fool.
My girls are 13 and 14, 18 months apart. Last week, they were in the kitchen fighting over cereal. I couldn't even make out the parameters of the disagreement. Audrey is older, but Nia is bigger, and I don't mean this just in body. No one ever forgets meeting Nia. Even when she was a baby, her personality was like a slap in the face, followed by a smile, and then you'd smile and want her to do it again. Audrey, on the other hand, was a nice kid, in a fairly uncomplicated kind of way. Nia lives with her eyes on the screen of her phone. It's a new one, a gift from her dad, that no doubt fell off a truck somewhere. Audrey, on the other hand, is taken by all things analog. Lately, she joined the planner community, which is a bunch of kids who keep old-fashioned paper calendars. They meet on Wednesdays after school and exchange stickers that they affix to the pages to document their moods, how much water they drink, and whether they have to go to band practice or whatever. Audrey says she enjoys meeting with like-minded people. I don't quite get it, how you could spend all afternoon talking about stickers, but it gives her pleasure, so I stay out of her way. I have even tried to be the cool mom, and I slapped a sparkly heart on the cover of my checkbook, because I still write checks. When I walked in on their fight last week at breakfast, they were glaring at each other over their empty bowls. Both girls wore yellow-collared blouses, cinched at the waist. This was likely the root of the problem. Neither was willing to change. But the matter at hand involved the boxes of cereal in the center of the table. Whatever this is, I said, please resolve it in the next 3 minutes or you will miss the bus. Nia smirked at Audrey and said, you are a stupid person. She didn't say it, she pronounced it. I watched my older girl take this news into her pores, and I imagined it traveling her bloodstream straight to her heart. Nia, apologize to your sister. Nia said, I want to live with Daddy. Audrey said, I just wanted some cereal. Or I could live with Aunt Cam. Everyone who lives here has to live here, I said. That has been disproven, said Nia. Dad used to live here, now he doesn't. This clearly means that there are options. I watched my children. Audrey opened her day planner and made a note. Nia stared at me with challenging eyes. She reminded me of Cam. She shook her head and I heard my sister's voice. You are so stupid. And then I remembered the sorrow on my mother's face. You lost my Toussaint. You gave it away? Like a trinket? And then Mama cried into her hands. I knew him, she said, remembering her conversations with the artist when she had been a newlywed, in love but not completely gelled as a wife, when she didn't know that two tiny lives were just getting started inside her. And I would be foolish not to know that she was crying for the disappointing mess of my life. I was a doctor, but not like my father, the first black cardiologist allowed to perform surgery at Crawford Long. As a woman, there was a lot of room for me to be a famous first, but dermatology doesn't really lend itself to such milestones. But maybe I flatter myself to think that she was crying for me. Daddy was diagnosed by then, although they decided not to tell me and Cam. Maybe her tears were not a mother's tears, but the sadness of a woman facing the fear of losing her lover of more than 40 years. Cam handed Mama a crisp handkerchief from her jacket pocket, and she then turned her attention to her own hands, bending her fingers into a fist. Stupid, was all she said.
Being a mama is hard. Being a daughter is hard. Being a sister is not easy either. I considered Audrey and Nia now, getting ready for school, simmering with rage and shame over something that wasn't cereal, but cereal would have to do because anger has to have somewhere to go. Train was mostly good with the girls. I won't say he had a favorite, but Nia was most like him, creative and loud. And as a man who loved himself so fiercely, he couldn't help doting over her, especially once I made it clear that we weren't going to keep having babies until he got his son. He loved Audrey too, but he didn't look at her and see himself shining back at him. They both took the divorce hard, but it came as a shock to Nia. When we told them, we gave them the whole talk about how we were splitting up, but were still committed to being their parents, etc., etc. Audrey sighed, world weary at 12, but Nia wanted more information. Who is leaving who? Train opened his arms and smothered the question in a hug. I envied the girls this permanent space in his heart. The question was a hard one. I guess to be literal, I was leaving him. I was the one who finally said, this is not workable. But does being the one to say it mean I was the one who did it? When I spoke those words, he didn't fight me. He said, you're right. Does that mean that we were leaving each other? I asked Cam this when we were preparing for court, and she said, you are the one leaving him. I pushed back, countering that he was the one who ruined the marriage, citing the girlfriends and his apparent inability to make a living. In a way, he left me, or he pushed me out. Cam said, if you had any self-respect, you would be proud to say that you left him. Who wants to get left by a grown man who wants people to call him Freight Train? I didn't want to leave him, and I didn't want to get left. I wanted to be a couple that other people marveled at the way it seemed to work, even though it might have been unlikely on paper. Me, the doctor, married to a musician. We could take the Atlanta stereotype of his and hers Mercedes-Benzes and break it over our knees. I tried explaining this to Mama about a week after we announced our engagement. She was distressed. That's the word Daddy used.
Your mother is distressed.
Daddy didn't say what he felt. Instead, he said,
I am a cardiologist. Nothing about the heart can ever truly surprise me.
Mama said she was worried about my future. Can he provide for you? Mama, I said, I can provide for myself. Isn't that why I went to medical school?
You went to medical school to become a doctor, she said, not to become a man. You were the one I was counting on.
Mama, I said, it's going to be okay. I'm going to marry him, and we're going to have a house full of kids and a house full of love. We're going to laugh about this, how you were worried that he couldn't provide, and now look how happy everyone is. Now look at all the grandkids. Mama, this is going to be good. We're going to be happy. About 6 months after that, Cam announced her intention to go to Massachusetts and marry a woman, and then Mama came around to me marrying Train. He was a man, after all, and really, in this economy, that wasn't a small detail. Cam never went to Massachusetts to marry anyone. I suspect she dropped that bomb to take some of the pressure off, clearing me to veer off the path this once. This is why she didn't buy me a wedding gift. She figured she had done enough. As a married woman, my mother had been no Ophelia when she became Ophelia. The artist knew that she wasn't a maiden more than a year after her wedding, but he didn't mind. That summer, Mother went to Harvard to study Shakespeare, having won a scholarship to a special program for school teachers. For the first time in her life, she lived by herself. The apartment was a tiny studio, but she had to admit that she enjoyed being queen of her castle. She cherished her solitary morning walks to the cafe, where she caught the eye of a virtuoso. My mother gave Ophelia to me on the occasion of my wedding, but it wasn't a wedding present, exactly, as it was a gift to me and me alone. She announced her intentions as I was changing from my gown into my reception dress. As I held my stomach in, Cam placed her warm palms on my back, pushing the silk panels together so Mama could unhook the column of pearls stretching from the top of my back to the swell of my behind. I'll never forget the feeling of Cam's strong hands and my mother's careful flurry of fingers. I leaned into their attention because this was my last moment of being a bride. When they were done, the dress would fall to the floor, and then I would be a wife. "I want you to have the Toussaint," my mother said, as she freed the last pearl from its silk loop. "What?" Cam removed her hands and the gown dropped, leaving me standing in the complicated underwear that couture requires. It didn't take twin ESP to see the hurt in her face. "Don't be jealous, Camellia. I decided years ago that whichever of you got married first would receive the Toussaint." "Help me out of this dress," Cam said, her voice hoarse. I moved toward my sister, but my mother got there first. "Shh, Camellia," she said. "I saved my engagement ring for you."
"Fuck that engagement ring," Cam said, once my mother was gone.
The bridesmaid dress was heaped in the corner, and Cam wore a pair of gray wool trousers and a crisp white shirt. There is only one word to describe her: handsome. And I told her so.
"Mama was wrong," Cam said. "I'm not jealous of you. I just love that piece of art. Ever since we were little, I used to sit under it and check it out in different light. Depending on the time of day, sometimes Ophelia looked like me, sometimes like you, and sometimes like Mama. When we read Hamlet in high school, I got mad when I found out Ophelia was supposed to be dead. I asked Mama about that, and she said, 'Shakespeare's Ophelia might be dead, but Toussaint's Ophelia is very much alive.' It's the only time I can remember her sitting down with just me by myself. She poured me a thimble of sherry and gave me the whole story. She posed for him. You didn't know that, did you? She went to Toussaint's studio. He was a good-looking man, you know."
"But Cam, when you say posed, what do you mean? Ophelia is
naked," Cam finished. "I think she knew I was wondering if you and I were Toussaints instead of ordinary halls, because she laughed and slapped my thigh. She told me that she went to his studio and took off her clothes because she wanted somebody to see her. Mama thought she would be shy about stripping down in front of a man who wasn't daddy. Toussaint handed her a robe and she stepped behind a cardboard screen. The room was small and it was hot in there, no air conditioning. The paint fumes had her slightly buzzed. He said, 'Please show yourself.' And she flung the robe off. Standing in the natural light, she felt like a goddess."
"A goddess? She used those words?"
"I could imagine her feeling pretty, not divine." "You should have seen her, Leah. She thrust her chest out and kind of tossed her hair. She said, 'I was a goddess that afternoon.' When she posed, it was 68. She had been married about, what, a year and some change? She told me that she was happy, but she missed herself, you know? I knew. I had been married only an hour and a half, and I missed myself already. And don't forget, she didn't know it yet, but she was pregnant with us. So it's really our first picture together." "I'm not jealous," she said again. "I just didn't think that she would cut me out like that. Not after she told me the story and everything. She never really talked to me like that before. Just me by myself. And I thought it mattered to her."
Downstairs, as the band played, my mother pulled a velvet cloth from the painting that waited on an easel. Train was resplendent in his tuxedo, and he smelled good, like sandalwood and the sea. As Mother spoke her piece, champagne glass aloft, Train whispered, "It's you. Beautiful, beautiful you." He snaked his arm around my waist, pulled me in, and pressed a hot kiss at the back of my neck. The place that old people call the kitchen. "Beautiful, beautiful you," he said. I turned my eyes to my sister, who kept hers on Ophelia. Then I looked at our beaming mother, standing beside the champagne fountain, glowing like a goddess. Daddy touched the small of her back as they headed to the dance floor. I noticed that his socks were the same dove gray of her dress. When they stepped and twirled in rhythm with the jazz trio, all the wedding guests applauded. Train then took my hand, and we joined them on the floor, showing off a few moves of our own. My husband of just one day dipped me and leaned over and said, "We are incredibly blessed." Back on my feet, I twirled and thought, "This is marriage. This is love." And it was love. And it was marriage. And this is divorce, lurking outside the house your ex-husband bought without telling you, holding the key to that house which you stole from your sweet daughter's key ring. Divorce is stealing back your mother's Ophelia because you don't want your sister to have to share a face with someone foolish enough to trade your inheritance for a song. Stock still on the porch, I held the key, poised to slide it in the lock. I looked around, checking for witnesses, I guess. What I saw was a neighborhood in flux. The bungalow across the street had been restored to full Frank Lloyd Wright splendor, with stained glass and the whole nine. But whoever remodeled it must have been at work to pay the bills. Train's immediate neighbors were home, but they weren't studying us. A woman wearing a pretty blue headscarf perched on a peeling banister, smoking a cigarette. She ignored us so pointedly that she could have been the president of whatever organization stood in opposition to the neighborhood watch. Train's house split the difference. The paint job was fresh, but he hadn't bothered to replace the porch swing when someone stole it last year. The chains still dangled from the beams. "You sure he's not home?" Cam asked, not for the first time. "Yep. According to his website, he's in Switzerland."
"He doesn't have an alarm?" Cam said. "Who doesn't have an alarm?"
"Train," I said. "And it's all the more reason to rescue the Toussaint."
"Please don't get me disbarred up in here," said Cam.
The key went in easy, the tumblers responding as though I had every right to cross this threshold.
"Okay, twin," said Cam. "Let's see what you're made of."
We stepped into the foyer and were greeted by the smell of butter and sugar, the crusty scent of pound cake. I looked at Cam and Cam looked at me, and this was one of the moments when I could see that we really were twins. Other people don't get how I can sometimes fail to see the resemblance. They call us identical twins for a reason. But when I see Cam, I see my sister. When there are photos of us, I never have any trouble knowing which brown-skinned woman is me. But other times, looking at Cam is like looking at myself, my real self, what maybe I should call my Ophelia self.
"What the hell?" Cam said.
"Baking?" "Hello?" said a voice behind us. We turned to find a young woman. Not a kid, she was grown. Not as grown as us, but definitely adult, if only entry level. Using my professional eyes, I scanned her face for lines and sun damage. Black don't crack, as they say. But I clocked her as a well-moisturized 28. Cam and I would turn 49 on our birthday next March. Heavy glasses, marred by a spot of cake batter, rested on her wide face. Her hair was gathered at the top of her head in an unruly puff that reminded me of Nia and Audrey when they were toddlers.
I'm Melanie.
She held out her hand in my sister's direction, but Cam had her arms crossed to hide the latex gloves. I took a quick step and accepted the greeting.
I'm Amelia, I said, hoping that my whole name would throw her.
I'm Camelia, said Cam, taking my lead.
You all are
twins,
we said together. If it wasn't so funny, it would be funny. We hadn't done this since we were children.
We're here to pick up a painting, I said, proud of myself for thinking on the spot.
Train, as a jazz musician, always said that improvisation is the greatest demand you could make of your mind. I raised my voice to cover the noise of Cam pulling off the rubber gloves. It's an image of a young girl floating on a river, leaves in her hair.
Oh, said the girl. Maurice keeps it in the bedroom.
The fact that she called him by his given name meant that they were either very close or very casual. The only time I ever used his government name was when I, Amelia, took him, Maurice, to be my lawfully wedded, back when I was under the impression that I was lucky. And here was this young lady, Melanie, cooking in his kitchen and calling his name like it was nothing.
He didn't tell me you were coming. Let me call him.
Melanie took out a spangled phone case from her apron pocket.
It's my company, she said, showing me the words on the case. True Confections. It's a boutique bakery. Get it? True Confections.
My oven went out, so Maurice said I could use his. She walked toward the kitchen and we followed her like ducklings.
He has a Viking.
She pointed at the commercial-style oven.
Me? I have a baking business and I just have a bullshit General Electric. But this man, he never cooks, but he has a Viking. Isn't that the way it always is?
If I wanted to talk about the way it always is, I would point out the way that men seem to have endless options in life. On the counter was a pound cake that didn't pop out of the pan right. One side was golden brown and fluted, but the other side was torn, revealing soft yellow. The girl, leveling off a cup of sugar, said to Cam,
"Pinch off a piece."
Cam, smiling, obliged.
"This is 7-Up cake?" she asked, popping a chunk into her mouth. "Our Nana used to make this."
"Yep," said the girl. "My idea for my company is that I only bake heirloom pastries. My mama passed when I was in the 3rd grade, so I made her cakes to help me remember her. She left me a whole box of recipes with instructions in her own handwriting. Well, she didn't leave them for me. How could she know she was going to be in a car wreck? My auntie kept them until I turned 18. About 5 years ago, I decided to make every cake." She smiled and put her hand on her shapely hip. "And I am wearing them right here. Whenever I go to try on a pair of jeans, my mama is with me." She laughed.
Cam, planted on a bar stool munching cake, made small talk, but I knew she was thinking. I stood in the doorway to what I assumed was Train's bedroom, where Ophelia was hung. We would be found out, no doubt. When little Miss Poundcake mentioned to Maurice that a pair of solidly built, identical twins stopped by, opened the door with a key, took Ophelia and ran, there's no doubt he would know precisely who had robbed him. But then again, if he had come home and nothing was gone but Ophelia, he would have a pretty good guess who had taken it.
"So, where is the painting?" I asked her.
"We need to get going."
"Just let me finish creaming the butter and sugar. Then I'll call Maurice. I'm sure it's okay, but I think that I should probably call him."
She turned the stand mixer on high. I never bake. Therefore, I didn't notice before that the mixer had somehow gone with Train when he moved out. My own mother had given it to me for my birthday a few years back. She had given one to Cam, too, still trying to twin us. Once the butter was creamed, she turned off the mixer and searched for the phone in its glittery case. "I just had it," she said. Cam, still chewing, winked at me and patted the kangaroo pocket of her hoodie.
"I would offer to call it," she said, "but I left my phone in the car."
Melanie looked around a while longer and frowned.
"I have the ringer off anyway."
"You could just point us to the painting," I said, "and we will be on our way." She frowned again, harder.
"I'm not comfortable with this," she said.
"Here," I said, handing her my phone. "Use mine to make the call." She took it from me and handed it back.
"I don't know the number by heart. It's saved on my phone."
It was saved on mine, too, but I didn't mention this, earning me another wink from Cam.
"How did you get a key to this house?" she said. "You don't live here."
"Well," Cam said, "we're old friends of Train's. We've known him for years. He asked us to pick up the painting. We're taking it to have it reframed. Sometimes things have to be reframed."
"Maurice didn't tell me you were coming."
Every time she spoke his name, it made me twitch a little.
"Well, Maurice didn't tell us you would be here either," Cam reasoned.
"My guess is Train doesn't tell you a lot of things," I said.
"Melanie,"
Cam said, loud, steering the conversation away from what Train does and doesn't tell people.
"Add your eggs to your batter. Cakes don't like it when you stall on them. Add your eggs and we can talk."
I watched my sister, lit by the daylight streaming in from the bay windows and glow of the pendant lamps over the breakfast bar. Had I gone to film school after all, I would have made a movie about her.
"How many eggs for a 7-Up cake? 4 or 5?
5,
Melanie said slowly. I couldn't tell if she was afraid or mesmerized.
"They room temp?"
"Of course," she said. "I bake for a living."
Cam nodded and moved to the mixer.
"I solve problems for a living."
Cam turned on the mixer, and the paddles slapped through the mixture in the silver bowl. She cracked an egg and added it.
"Give me the spatula."
The girl handed her the spatula. While they fretted over batter, I puttered around the kitchen. A magnet shaped like a trumpet kept a photo of Audrey and Nia stuck to the fridge. The photo was old, back when they were just a couple of cute kids brimming with potential. They were newly minted teenagers now, struggling to live in their bodies and find their way up, under, and through complicated social networks. My girls were different from each other, but I loved them fiercely and equally. I wondered if they would agree. Once the eggs were folded in, Melanie and Cam debated how much vanilla was enough. Apparently, the recipe called for 1 teaspoon, but Cam said a tablespoon would be better.
"A teaspoon is just stingy."
"I'm not stupid,"
the girl said.
"Nobody said anybody was stupid," Cam said.
"Not true," I called over my shoulder.
"You didn't say Melanie was stupid. You have said other people were stupid."
Cam sighed.
"Do you want me to apologize for that again? You are not stupid. What you did was stupid, but everyone does stupid shit from time to time."
Melanie tapped a spoon against the side of a glass measuring cup, like she was making a toast.
"What I meant is that I know what is going on here. Which one of you is his wife? I recognize you from the picture. I just didn't know there were 2 of you."
"Well, technically," Cam started.
The girl lifted her shoulders in a frustrated shrug.
"He swore up and down he was divorced. Let me check the closets up under the bed. He said he was 2 years divorced, but the vibe set off my spidey sense. You know how you can tell a man isn't really available?"
"Give me the vanilla, baby," Cam said.
She gave Cam the small bottle and kept talking while Cam added a splash to the bowl.
I went all over this house like it was a crime scene, trying to find some proof of you, that he was married, because I could tell he was spoken for. Is this a rental property? Airbnb? Do y'all live somewhere off Cascade Road? You can tell me. I am not trying to fight you over him. I just want to know. She was forlorn, this young woman. She sat herself on one of the stools at the breakfast nook, staring at her empty hands, while Cam finished up with the pound cake, alternating milk and sifted flour. He's just so nice when he's nice, Melanie said. You know how he can play his bass like he's talking to you, telling you a secret up under the song? When he's doing that, I feel like he is my man, all by myself. In January, he carried me with him to Bahia for the jazz festival. I didn't even have a passport, and he paid for me to get one. He said I needed to be ready to experience the world. It was fun, flying over there and hanging out with the band, but I could always tell someone else was on his mind. And when I saw your picture, I knew. I didn't know it was you, and even now, I don't know which one of you is the one, but your picture hanging over the bed made me nervous, so I took it down and put it underneath the dresser. Cam sucked in her breath. Did you damage it? No, she said. He put it right back up on the wall. I asked him right out. I said, is that your wife? And he said he didn't have a wife. Do you love him? I asked.
Relevance? Cam countered.
Obviously, Melanie said, taking the bowl from Cam and scraping the batter into a prepared bundt pan. I sometimes wonder if my mother hadn't died, if I would have ended up in so many shitty situations. Mothers are supposed to teach you how to avoid married men. They are supposed to teach you how not to fall in love with old-ass musicians. All I have from my mother are these recipes. Red velvet, blackberry jam, sock it to me, everything. But how is that helping me in real life? She had a way about her, this girl. She slapped the sides of the pan to get the air out and then slid it into the oven while Cam held the door open. And this cake isn't a true confection. You put all that vanilla in it. My mama didn't want me to use so much vanilla. She snuck a corner of her apron between her glasses and her face and blotted her eyes. I didn't know he was still married, she said to Cam. I hope you will believe me. I'm not trying to break up anybody's home.
Oh, Cam said. I'm not the wife. Oh, no, not me.
Melanie turned, then to me. You? Me, I said. Well, not me anymore. We have been divorced for 2 years. He wasn't lying. At least not about that. I sat down in the chair that Cam had vacated and used a clean butter knife to cut a piece of the imperfect 7-Up cake. It was good, and it tasted mama made. I just want my painting back, I said. The girl in the river is our mother. Cam said, just point us to it and we will be on our way. Melanie said, can't I just call him first?
You can call him as soon as we're gone, I said.
He trusted me to stay here while he's in Europe. I can't just give his most prized possession away. He loves that painting. He sits right in front of it, watching it like it's a TV, saying how the girl seems like a different person depending on the light. I could never see what he sees in it, but I could tell that he felt tied up to whatever he saw. He was so connected that I thought he was still married to her.
Nope, Cam said. He's divorced, free and clear. We have papers to prove that. So how about you hand over the art, and then you don't have to look at it anymore. Everybody's happy.
Melanie didn't seem happy. I can't just give away his stuff.
It's not his, Cam said.
The steel in her voice took me back to my wedding day. I remembered the feel of my mother's fingers and my sister's palms.
The room had been drafty, and I stood there nearly nude as my clothing had fallen away. My mother was no doubt reliving a day when she had lain bare and been touched by the eyes of a genius. Cam, still trussed into the lavender dress, had sucked in deep breaths and swallowed down a dark and sticky emotion she refused to share. In Train's kitchen, I took a step to close the space between my sister and me. I had almost forgotten Melanie was in the room, but then she spoke to me.
Do you love him?
Melanie's voice was kind of sassy, and I wanted to tell her to watch her tone, like I was scolding Nia or Audrey.
Is this some way you want to stay connected to him? Like you'll get the painting, then he'll call the police, then you get to go back to court and fight about it? My auntie told me that fighting and that other word both start with F.
Cam raised her brows and said, I think this is a relevant line of inquiry. They both turned to me, waiting for me to tell them something that was neither of their business.
He's the father of my children.
Cam said, I think we are all aware of this.
Two girls, right?
Melanie said, tipping her head in the direction of the fridge.
Audrey and Nia. But that's not the question, Melanie said.
I snuck a glance at Cam. After all, she was my lawyer, and I was starting to feel like I was back in front of the judge. Prepping for court, she coached me on what to say to get what we wanted, but this questioning had a different vibe.
Cam, I said, you know how I feel.
Melanie said,
are you talking about twin ESP?
Cam said, I know what you think, but I don't know what you feel.
I said to my sister, I know what you feel, but I don't know what you think.
On our wedding day, Train made a joke at the altar before the minister. My father had just given me away, whatever that really means. Cam held my bouquet. Train's best man was hung over with bloodshot eyes. I looked the most like my mother than I ever have in my life. Starved down to my fighting weight and my hair pinned down tight. The Reverend asked Train the questions asked of every groom, for richer, for poorer, all the way to till death do you part. Train cracked his mischievous smile, the one I fell for too fast one night at the Blue Note. He grinned with his eyes on me and said,
is that a trick question?
Is this a trick question? I said to Cam and Melanie. I know where this is going. Melanie wanted me to say I loved him. Then she could feel justified in loving him herself. Cam needed me to say that I didn't. I could answer either way, and I wouldn't be telling a lie.
When you love someone, you can never be free of them, not completely. There's no statute of limitations. I loved Train the day I married him, the day he asked if this was a trick. I loved him the day that I gave him Mama's Ophelia in exchange for notes on paper. I loved him when I found out that he frequently entertained other women when he was on the road. I loved him when I discovered that there was one in particular that he had been entertaining for over a year. I loved him when I discovered that he didn't love me anymore. And if he didn't love me on that day, then he had never loved me at all. But what does his love have to do with mine?
Melanie and Cam leaned against the breakfast bar, poised for my answer. I'm not stupid, I said.
They both looked annoyed.
Are we back here again? Said Cam. Why can't you just let it go?
It was just one word. I said I was sorry.
But you never said you didn't mean it. Twin, I wasn't stupid. I was just in love.
Love happens to people. That's how you know you're in love, when you do things that other people might think is stupid.
It's like how you know you are drunk. What would be the point of getting drunk if you still act sober?
Are you in love today?
Melanie threw the words over her shoulder while bending to peek into the oven.
Don't worry about me, I said. Why do you care about my heart? My heart is my own concern.
Cam said, this is a shit show.
It is, I said. Love is a shit show sometimes. It's a trick question in a trick life. Tired of endlessly seeking permission, I crossed the threshold into Train's bedroom. It smelled like him, like clove cigarettes and bay rum. The room was furnished like a college crash pad, but tidy, like an army barrack. The furniture was cheap, like he had put it all together with an Allen wrench and a Phillips head screwdriver. This is how he lived when I first met him, and I was as impressed that he didn't go to med school as he was with the fact that I had. Ophelia was out of place in this room, in which nothing was precious or even personal. But there she was, over the simple platform bed. The overhead light was glaring, 2 75-watt bulbs. Even though the museum glass would protect the art from the damage, I flipped the switch. In half light, Ophelia seemed more like a photograph than a painting. Cam and Melanie were in the room now. Cam said,
when I was a kid, I used to pretend it was me, floating away to someplace better.
Melanie said, that's your mother? I nodded. I would do anything to have something like this to remember my mama by. I have my cakes, and my auntie gave me some pictures. But they don't mean anything to me, really. I can't remember when they were taken. I was too young.
Cam said, we don't know our mother like she was in this painting. I don't even think our daddy really knew her like this.
If I give it to you, Melanie said, you know that's the end for me and Train.
What if you don't give it? Said Cam, ever the lawyer. What if Leah just takes it?
It is your mother? Melanie said, a question in her voice. That's her. And she gave it to you. She pointed at me. She did. And you're here because you want it back.
I'm here because I want to give it to my sister, I said. I want her to have it.
Cam plunked herself down on the thin mattress.
Twin,
she said, but her voice caught. She folded her lips and shook her head. Still unable to speak, Cam patted the space beside her, and I joined her. She turned toward me, and we pressed our foreheads together. I touched her hair, resting the pads of my fingers on her warm scalp. I closed my eyes and breathed her in.
Twin, Cam said, I don't want it. The only thing worse than not having it would be to have it, because if I have it, then it means that you don't.
Take it, twin, I said. Mama should have given it to you in the first place. I never should have accepted it. I'm so sorry. Melanie said, then just let Maurice have it.
That's stupid, I said.
Was he really that bad?
Yes,
Cam and I said at once. I bent to take off my shoes before climbing up on the bed. The blanket was soft under my feet as I lifted the Ophelia off the hook. The wooden frame was heavier than I realized, yet I kept my balance. I handed it to Cam. Put it in the car, now. And for once, my sister did what I told her to do. By now, the air was fragrant with the smell of baking vanilla. Melanie and I were alone in my ex-husband's bedroom. She took a few worried paces, balling and unballing her fists.
What did I just do? She asked.
Melanie. I put my arms around her shoulders. Her body felt solid and strong, but there was a fragility about her. Love him if you want to. It won't kill you. It didn't kill me. I won't go so far as to say that it made me stronger. He cheated on me. He bought this house behind my back. He made a fool of me in front of my sister, and who knows what all this is doing to my kids. That's what's hurting me, not the loving. I don't regret the loving. Melanie turned away, covering her face with her hands. I sat beside her and gently tugged her wrists until she showed her face. Listen to me. Please listen to me. I knew I wasn't her mama, but I was two people's mama, and I had something to say. One day in the future, she will take stock of her life. I didn't want Train to be the before and after that makes her pine for today. Use your phone, I said, and take your own picture. And check that photo every year just to make sure you're still yourself. I walked out of Train's house not looking or feeling like a goddess. But I felt good enough. The wind shook loose a few blazing red leaves, and I tucked one behind my ear like a gardenia. Cam stood beside the car, wrapping the painting in bubble wrap and a mover's blanket. The engine was running and the music blasting. She swayed to a samba beat as she worked. The lady from the house next door stepped out on her porch, dressed in a pink uniform. She did a quick two-step in time with Cam. That's what I'm talking about, she said. Won't he do it? Won't he will, Cam called back. As I approached, my sister stopped dancing. You okay? Yeah, I said. It was just a lot. But we got what we came for. For a minute, I wasn't sure that we could pull it off, but we did it. We got her back. Cam performed a little end zone dance. Cam, I said, just take it. Mama gave it to me. I'm giving it to you. Cam said, that's not really the chain of custody. Don't talk lawyer to me. I'm trying to make something right. My sister took my hand and pressed it to her face, letting her lips graze my knuckles as she spoke. I don't want it. I used to. When Mama gave it to you, I felt like I was nobody to her. Like she didn't love me or that she would never forgive me for being me, for being Cam and not Camellia. I got ready to speak, but she cut me off. And I was trying to catch your eye, twin. But you wouldn't look at me. Like you and Mama were all caught up in being wives and brides, invitations and RSVPs, all of that. I was strapped into that ugly purple dress and I couldn't even breathe. A blister on my heel was actually bleeding. I was miserable. And nobody even noticed. Not even you, twin. I didn't know what would be better, to tell her that I did notice, but I just didn't do anything, or pretend that I somehow missed her sorrow. All these years, I never wanted to make you be like me, Cam said. You ever think about that? Truth be told, I had not. This was the feeling my sister cloaked from me, on those hard moments that I couldn't find the words for what I saw in the tight set of her jaw. Take it, Cam, I said. It was your favor to have, not mine. When I gave Ophelia to Train, it was because he admired it and I wanted him to have whatever he desired. Mama said I gave it away like a trinket, and maybe she had been right. Giving it to my sister was giving it away the way you give your heart, the way you give your blessing. She shook her head. Mama gave it to you because you needed it. You were the one walking down the aisle. She could see what was coming around the corner. Now I took Cam's hand and kissed it. Our connection was strong again, and I knew what she thought and what she felt. Let's drive, I said. We're going to Mama's house, right? Cam said. Yeah, I think so. What are you going to tell her? Nothing, I said. We're just going to put it back on the wall. Makes sense, she said. It's hers. No, twin, it's more than hers. It's her. And for the first time in many years, we were in complete agreement, as identical as the day we were born.
This has been an Audible original, produced by Audible Originals, written by Tayari Jones, performed by Bonnie Turpin, executive producers Laura Blackman and Kat Lambrechts, edited by Kevin Mazur, mastered by Joe Dell'Aquila, acquisition and development Elizabeth Scholar, vice president of Audible Studios Mike Charzik, editor-in-chief Audible Original Publishing David Blum. Copyright 2020 by Tayari Jones. Sound recording copyright 2020 by Audible Originals, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.